Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 24, 2016. South Sudan says the presence of Machar in Khartoum will not spoil relations between the two countries.
The Khartoum has declared that Machar is there on European ground. And that is none of our concern because the visit of the first vice president of Khartoum, the progress in the relations between the two countries. So they are pursuing the relations with Sudan. Sudan is still a country.
And more people are killed in Jonglei State.
There are women and there are children. And the number is in total 33. And these 23 are soldiers and 10 are civilians.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government says the decision taken by the Sudanese government to allow former first Vice President Riek Machar to seek medical treatment in Khartoum will not affect relations between the two countries. The spokesperson for South Sudan's Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Mawin McCall Arik, says Juba will continue to work with Khartoum. Arik says Juba looks to Sudan for trade and other economic support.
Our reaction, we don't have any reaction as to Riek Machar President Khartoum. We have seen that the Khartoum has declared that that is there on humanitarian ground. And that is none of our concern because the visit of the first vice president of Khartoum, the progress in the relations between the two countries. So we are pursuing good relations with Sudan. Sudan is a sister country. And you have seen the high delegation of South Sudan, that one to Khartoum and came back. Florin ways of good relations and the way forward. The president of Yakin Khartoum is none of our concern. He's there, as the Sudan has declared, he's there for one and two grounds. And a decision of Sudan to skip Yakin Khartoum.
Arik says even though the announcement of Machar's presence in Khartoum has overlapped with the recent visit of South Sudan's delegation headed by new first Vice President Taban Dengai, Juba's focus of maintaining good relations with Khartoum will not change.
That is completely a decision of the Republic of Sudan to announce the President Riek Machar when and whatever they will have announced. It has nothing to do with our intention here to engage Sudan on our bilateral relations. And so the visit, coincidentally, of the first vice president in Khartoum coincided with that announcement. And we are happy that South Sudan and Sudan are engaging themselves to be able to forge very, very successful relations as we go forward.
Yesterday, the Sudanese government announced it is hosting Machar on humanitarian grounds. Sudan Information Minister Ahmed Bilal told South Sudan in Focus that Mr. Machar was in what he calls a bad condition. Machar fled from Juba in July shortly after heavy fighting broke out in Juba between Machar's forces and South Sudan Army. Sudanese journalists say Machar is in Al Amal Hospital, a medical facility owned by Sudan's National Security and Intelligence Services. No reporters have been allowed to speak with Machar or to the doctors treating him. Machar was secretly moved from the Democratic Republic of Congo to Khartoum this week. SPLMIO officials in Nairobi have not made any official statement on Machar's health conditions. South Sudan in Focus reached out to an appointed member of parliament with the IO for comments, but he declined to speak. Michael Atit contributed this report from Juba. Economic experts say a recent decision by South Sudan's central bank to auction treasury bills to raise money can help the country recover from the current economic crisis. The experts say the decision will patch up the country's collapsing economy. Justin Tito reports for VOA from Juba.
The Bank of South Sudan issued a public note last week calling on eligible financial institutions, corporate bodies, foreign and local individual investors to compete in the auction of more than a million South Sudan pounds. The auction introduced by officials today is dubbed short debt instrument treasury bill. A treasury bill, a short-dated government financial security arrangement, no interest but issued at a discount on its recovery price. Anthony Wong is a consultant and managing director of the Ebony National Bank. He says all commercial banks must buy the treasury bill at this time to improve on the country's economy.
There are ways to make better use of the currency that has already been issued by the central bank previously. Now, as I'm reinforcing what the governor just said, by doing T-bills, all of a sudden, the pressure on printing new money has kind of disappeared. Because printing money will only cause inflation.
Anthony Wong says the treasury bill will help local currency to circulate around and allow the central bank to control the economy of the country through the commercial banks.
The money that they raise, they'll go back out there. In 1 week's time, they all pay to the government employees, right? That's their salary. Now, what do the employees do? They go out and spend it. They buy food, medical supplies, services for the family. Guess what? These money go right back into the system, and these money will go immediately, 1 week later, back into the banks and back into the central bank vaults. So don't worry about it.
James Alich Garang is a senior economist with the Ebony Center for Strategic Studies, a Juba-based think tank. Alich describes the move as a win-win for both the government and businesses borrowing money from the government. He says the government should be very careful to avoid paying a high amount of debt to creditors.
Tomorrow they will reap interest, so that is their benefit. And the government needs money now to meet its obligation. And there's no other way to get money because it cannot raise money through production or loans abroad. We are in a situation where the economy is in a terrible shape. And if local investors are willing to buy this instrument, why not do it?
This is the second time the central bank is introducing the treasury bill, an effort to improve the country's economy. In 2012, the central bank introduced it, but the move failed. Central Bank Governor Cornelio Croyom says the treasury bill will raise money on a short-term basis to meet government expenditures, wages, and salaries of the public sector.
The principal amounts that itself to the government will be refunded, will be repaid to them, and will be repaid immediately. The time will not again elapse and no payment made. So they are going to benefit. If you have money, then you get it ready. In the state of our banks not able to pay interest rate, this is a chance for those who want to get something out of their money.
South Sudan's economy has been driven to the brink of disaster due to an overdependency on crude oil. The fate of the current treasury bid is unclear, but Central Bank Governor Koryom says the bank will work with the businesses in the country to attract more investors. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
The United States has committed an additional $138 million to South Sudan, but one analyst in Washington says that might not be enough. SIN Bureau reports the announcement comes at a time when reports of looting and destruction of humanitarian aid compounds have made headlines, prompting a warning from top U.S. diplomats to scale back donation if South Sudanese leaders do not put their house in order.
The United States has donated more than $1.7 billion to South Sudan since the conflict began in late 2013. This fiscal year alone, USAID has given over $400 million to respond to the increasing needs of 1.6 million IDPs and over 920,000 South Sudanese refugees in neighboring countries, making the U.S. the largest aid donor to South Sudan.
And yet people are still starving, are still being attacked in their camps, are still not seeing food aid arrive. So the problem is at the government level, and that's you've got to rattle that cage. You can't just throw some more money in.
Steve McDonald, a global fellow at the Washington-based Wilson Center, says despite continued donations, the humanitarian situation in South Sudan has only deepened, due largely to the ongoing violence across parts of the country, along with the government's decision to restrict movement of aid workers.
The government has shown a propensity to either divert or deny this kind of assistance to take place. So you can't just throw $138 million of foodstuffs and medicines out there and hope for the best with it. I think they have to have the government make an absolute commitment that this will be allowed to go forward.
The main warehouse belonging to the World Food Program was looted last month, shortly following the violence. The Human Rights Watch reported that at least 4,500 metric tons of food, enough to feed 220,000 people, was stolen. The incident last month was one of several reports of aid compounds being looted this year. In February, the French medical charity Médecins Sans Frontières, or MSF, reported its compound was looted in Pabour, and its staff was forced to evacuate to the UNMISS base, which did not have the same surgical capacity to treat patients. Speaking to reporters in Nairobi this week, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry delivered a clear warning to leaders of South Sudan, saying they must do more to ensure incidences like these do not continue.
We're not just going to provide help incessantly. If they're not willing to accept responsibility and do the things necessary to deliver to their people.
The International Organization for Migration in South Sudan will receive $17 million of the donations Kerry announced in Nairobi. IOM says it is planning to use a portion of that money to deliver aid to more than 600,000 IDPs who live in the most critical locations, including Bentu, Malakal, and Renk. IOM says $5.7 million will be used to provide safe drinking water, hygiene and sanitation in the protection of civilian site in Bentu and Malakal, while $5.4 million will go to health clinics to prevent the spread of disease in both sites. IOM says $845,000 will be used to bolster psychosocial support programs in Bentu. McDonald points out that all that money will not be useful if government and opposition soldiers prevent aid workers from delivering aid.
The international community has to be allowed to be able to openly and without restriction apply the aid, or it's not going to have the kind of effect that we wish for it. I mean, recently, the South Sudanese have been suffering not because of a lack of money and assistance being offered.
USAID did not immediately respond to a request to provide further detail on how the rest of the donations will be distributed or how soon the money would reach vulnerable populations. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
Authorities in Imatong State say seven inmates died this past week, while seven others are being treated at the Torit Civil Hospital for several diseases. Prison and health officials say the inmates' death could be due to starvation and overcrowding in prison cells. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Medical workers say the seven inmates died on separate days last week while receiving treatment at the hospital. Torit prison authorities brought 14 inmates to the hospital, including the seven who later died. Seven are now remaining at the hospital receiving treatment for various diseases. Hospital officials say by the time the inmates were brought to the hospital, they were too weak to respond well to medication. Lena Claudio is a nurse at Torit Civil Hospital and attended to the 14 inmates when they were admitted. She says those who died had been diagnosed with malaria, typhoid, and tuberculosis.
They brought the prisoners with lost weight, and then if we diagnose, we will get malaria, even tuberculosis, even this skin rashes. Then if we give medicine, it's okay for the skin rashes. But if we give medication for malaria, for us even in the hospital, there is no food for the patients. That is really we are searching. If we give treatment, but no food, what shall we do? Most of them get dead, pass away, about seven, and we keep some we discharge.
Authorities at Torit State Prison say most inmates at the facility suffer from contagious diseases and malnutrition. Director of Administration at Torit State Prison admits the inmates live in bad conditions. Colonel William Amaring also acknowledges that the overcrowding in the prison leads to the spread of diseases.
Lack of materials for their coverings and overcrowded prison where most are affected with different diseases. The breathing in the inmates alone, one gets different disease which can be contaminated to the other, which causes a lot of deaths in the prison.
Amaring says prisoners are starving to death. He is calling on the state government officials and humanitarian agencies to help feed the prisoners. He says prison authorities plan to set free inmates who are jailed for minor offenses in order to relieve overcrowding.
Congestion in the prison because the prison has a very small cell, cannot accommodate over 400. And now at present, currently, we have about 270 inmates which are overcrowded. So administration is trying to form some camp farms to reduce the number of the prisoners so that few are left and most who have small cases are to be taken to farm areas.
Torit Municipality Mayor Eddie William Ponciano says he met with prison officials to discuss the chronic food shortages at the prison, but says the prison does not fall under his jurisdiction.
1 hour ago, we finished our security committee meeting here, and the member of the prison complained that there's no food. And he said also there's no medicines. But we said to him, because in prison, there's a section which is a medical team there. Let them write to the Minister of Health or to DG of Health. Then he can address the issue of medicines. But the issue of food, yes, the state can talk about that. It is not me. Because it is a state prison. It should be the state to answer for it.
Imotong State Information Minister Jospin Akulang declined to comment on this story, saying she was busy. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, more people are killed in Jonglei State. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
can you get just as good a university education in your home country as you would abroad?
Yes, I can get a good university, number one. I can give an example in Uganda. We have Makerere University. It's a good university. So if it's a good university, it can give us whatever we can. Best ranked, I think, in Africa.
I believe that the schools out there are better. Maybe because the countries are much more developed and they do a lot of specialization than the schools or institutions we have this week.
Yeah, I think that you can get the best and quality education from your home university or from your country. But basing on other countries' development or level of study, you can go for further specialization, but after you come back to invest in your country.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Jonglei State officials say more than 280 people were killed during clashes between suspected SPLA-IO fighters and government forces in Pajut area in Payang County last week. Jonglei State Governor Philip Aguer says government forces repulsed the attackers and life is back to normal in the area. For VOA News, Jacob Achek has this story from Bor.
Information on the Panyang County casualties is just emerging. Even though the fighting occurred last week, State Governor Philip Aguer says more than 30 government soldiers were killed, while more than 250 suspected SPLA-IO fighters died during the fighting. Aguer says the August 20th attack on Fajut, at the same time IDPs were returning to resettle in their villages in Panyang County.
People have been forced to run again and retreat back to Poktap area. There are women and there are children, and the number is in total 33. And these 23 are soldiers and 10 are civilians. That include business people, it include women, and that is Pajut now is stable again because the SPLA have defeated the attackers. Unfortunately, those who are dying.
Aguer says He expects the death toll to rise as soldiers continue searching for more bodies. He says on August 18 and 19, armed men ambushed traders heading from Paju to Poktap, and five of the traders were killed.
Honor use also ambushed the traders who came from Dupadiet. Coming to Poktap, they ambushed them and they killed three people. And the youth from Dupadiet ran after them, tracing where they went to, and they were found. So they fought again with the youth, and they killed two people from our side.
Du County's Commissioner Malwal War says he believes the raiders went to destabilize the communities in his area. Aguer says the war is useless because it interrupted their normal life and properties has been affected. There is no independent confirmations on casualties from United Nations or other aid agencies operating in Jonglei State. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Bor.
Sudanese refugees living in the Idda refugee camp are protesting a recent decision by the United Nations to close the camp for good. The UN Refugee Agency is asking refugees to move to a new camp in Ajwang Tok in the former Unity State. VOA fellow Nadia Taha reports from Washington.
For the past few years, authorities of Ruang State and UNHCR have been trying to shut down Idda refugee camp, a home to more than 70,000 Sudanese refugees who fled the fighting between SPLM North and the Sudan Armed Forces in the Nuba Mountains in Sudan. The UNHCR is planning to shut down the camp because they believe SPLM North is recruiting young men from the camp, which is located near the South Sudan-Sudan border. Yunis Idris is a refugee from Nuba Mountains. Idris says he's not moving to the new camp because he believes it is too close to the border, which is controlled by the Sudanese armed forces.
Better go and die in the Nuba Mountains than even going to the new camp and face multiple of death. So they have to go back to Nuba Mountains.
Yunis says international organizations should provide help to refugees who remain at Idda camp.
They have to come and support maybe us to remain in this place rather than maybe going to that camp or even going back to Nuba Mountains. So I know very well these people right now, because they are not going back to Nuba Mountains, and UN are going to pull out. So very many of the people who will be remaining here, they are going to suffer.
Mayol Kour, the governor of Ruang State, says UNHCR can close the Idda refugees camp, but the government cannot move the refugees by force.
We as a government, we have nothing to do because we cannot force them to go and stay there. They are refugees. We cannot use force to close it.
Kour says the UNHCR may be moving the camp because it is not familiar with the geography of the area. He says UNHCR will not support either refugees who refuse to move to the new camps.
Those of UNHCR, they have to review their decision with the donors. I think the donors, they don't know the area. So they have just picked the information from some people, and then they use it without making real study about the area. It was Sudan who was pushing that camp should be closed because they have concept that those of SPLM North used to recruit people there in that camp.
Idda refugees claim the UN is not supporting educational activities in Idda camp because the agency built two new camps complete with schools and health facilities. The Sudanese refugees say they will not go to the new camps because they are too close to Sudanese and South Sudanese military barracks. Refugees from Nuba Mountains first arrived in Idda in 2011 when the Sudanese government began a bombing campaign that targeted rebels and civilians believed to be helping the rebels. Thousands abandoned their villages and fled south across the border to South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Nadia Taha in Washington.
Riot police in Zimbabwe have violently dispersed demonstrators who marched to the country's central bank to protest the proposed introduction of a bond notes to ease a persistent cash shortages. This is the latest in a series of anti-government protests as the country's economic crisis worsens. For VOA News, Sebastian Mwafu reports from Harare.
30. That is the siren of a water cannon vehicle wailing as Zimbabwean police tried to break up a protest calling for the resignation of President Robert Mugabe. The demonstrators accused the 92-year-old leader of ruining Zimbabwe's economy and disregarding human rights. They clashed with police and refused to disperse until officers fired gunshots into the air. Harrison Nkomo of Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights condemned the government's use of force.
Instead of using force, it must just do the right thing. The government must sort out infrastructure. Look at the condition of the roads. Look at the condition of the rail. When did we last have government building dams? There's total collapse of infrastructure. They must fix jobs. How do you have graduates playing football in the streets? Because they are totally unemployed. How do you have the industrial site resembling the sign of a funeral parlor? It's so pathetic. And they need to sort out corruption.
Western nations have long condemned Mugabe for allegedly rigging elections, suppressing the opposition, and driving Zimbabwe's economy into the ground with his policies. Mugabe has held on to power for 36 years since the country won its independence from Britain. Since last month, however, Zimbabwe has witnessed a rarely seen wave of protests against him. The Wednesday demonstration was organized by the youth of the opposition under the banner My Zimbabwe. Opposition parties are expected to hold protests Friday, demanding that Mugabe fix the moribund economy. The country's unemployment rate is estimated to be above 85%, and for months the government has failed to pay its workers on time. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that report by Sebastian Mofu from Harare brings us to the end of our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Dola Jadid by Silver X and WJ. We have been listening to Silver X and WJ with the song Dola Jadid. I am John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We hope to meet you back here again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.